The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
All right, thank you, Wilfred, Sarah, and Mike Santoli. I am Dominic Chu, in for Melissa Lee, and this is the Big Show, Fast Money. Tonight's trader lineup, Guy Adami, Tim Seymour, Dan Nathan, and Karen Feinerman. Tonight on the show, a Tuesday timeout. Stocks pulling back from their all-time highs, and one market professional is sounding the alarm on some recent high flyers, the names on her watch list. Plus, break out the candles. It's been a decade to the day since General Motors IPO. So what's going on and what's going to drive this stock for the next 10 years? And later on, Bitcoin's back. The cryptocurrency surging to its highest level in nearly 3 years. We will find out what's behind that big move in Bitcoin. But first, we start with Goliath versus Goliath. The big battle between two retail behemoths intensifying today. Amazon taking new aim at Walmart by launching an online prescription fulfillment service. It is called, yes, Amazon Pharmacy. It offers free delivery for Prime members. This is new for Amazon, but Walmart has long offered home delivery on certain prescription products. Today's news is the latest in that growing turf war between the two retail giants. So, who is the better bet in the battle royale for consumer dollars? Guy Adami, I turn to you first for this. Walmart, Amazon, who you got?
Well, first of all, Dom, it's great to have you. And you're right, this is the big show. I mean, this is like the Masters for you. And you mentioned Goliath versus, it's like you playing golf against Joe Kern, and everybody just can't, they're just glued to their television trying to figure out what's going to go on. But in this game of would you rather, and I'm going to self would you rather right at the top of the show, I would rather Walmart. And I think the stock sold off today for two reasons. I think there was a big inventory build. I think almost a 17% inventory build off a sales growth of about 5%. I think the street looked at that and said, maybe margins in the next quarter won't be great. And the other thing was the fact that they didn't seem to give guidance. I think that disappointed some people because, in my opinion, the quarter was solid. Amazon, by comparison, you have that September 2nd all-time high, 35.50. Then in October, 34.50. Then in November, 33.50-ish. So you've had a series of lower lows. At 29.50 in Amazon is your line in the sand. Breaks there, watch out. I would rather Walmart in this game of Goliath versus Goliath.
All right, so let's go here. We're going to go around the horn-ish, but I'm going to go diagonally down to Karen Feinerman. Which is it, Walmart or Amazon, the better buy at these levels?
Well, this is kind of a lame answer, but I'm long both. I am long much more Walmart, though, than I am Amazon. I think the valuation differential, even if we take out the cloud business, the valuation differential is so big that I have to be bigger in Walmart.
All right. Tim Seymour, you.
By the way, as much as I'd like to see you against Kernan on the golf course, I'd much rather see Godzilla versus Mothra, which was an
not
epic
Mecha
battle
Godzilla,
back in
not
the day.
Mecha and Godzilla, not Mecha
Godzilla. Maybe. But ultimately, if we're doing Amazon, Walmart, it's definitely Walmart. I've actually been adding to a Walmart long over the last couple of weeks, to be clear. If you look at their numbers in e-commerce and you look at the addressable market growth that they have as an opportunity ahead of them, totally dwarfs the opportunity to encroach upon where Walmart is on deliverable pharmacy. If you look at where same-store sales were for Walmart in the U.S., up 6.4%, the fact that they're actually growing their U.S. business in the same footprint is great, but the e-commerce growth, which is close to triple digits, the fact that they're in only 8.9% of U.S. households in Walmart Plus, about 10 million Walmart Plus already, tells me they have a much bigger opportunity to disrupt Amazon than Amazon does to them. And it's all about the multiple. Whatever you want to put put on Walmart, at least relative to an e-commerce multiple, is going to have a huge impact on where you value this company. But around 23 times, this company has a lot of room to expand on the multiple if you believe that this is a growing e-commerce story. Remember, Amazon didn't care about profitability in their first days of e-commerce and gaining market share and competing on price. This is what Walmart does in their sleep, and they're destroying people on groceries right now, especially on e-commerce groceries.
Now, Dan Nathan, I said Goliath versus Goliath in the beginning of the intro to this segment. In fact, Amazon, if you want to consider them Goliath, Walmart is like a mini Goliath. I mean, Amazon is umpteen, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's so much bigger than Walmart is in terms of market cap. But the stock return is key. Walmart is up 26%, very respectable in 2020. Amazon is still up 70% already so far this year. Is the valuation argument one that favors Walmart over Amazon?
I don't really think so. I mean, I think these guys all make great points about Walmart's ability to gain share. They have less than 10% e-commerce market share here in the U.S. You know, Amazon has 38% and it's still growing. Amazon grew sales, or is going to grow sales this year, 35% off a $280 billion number this year versus Walmart at low single digits. So to me, I think that Amazon is just so, you know, far ahead of Walmart. I think Walmart is doing amazing things. Target is doing amazing things. Some of our retailers were forced to adapt this year. They were forced to leverage investments they'd been making for years and take advantage of this acceleration into e-commerce. But I see no reason to believe that Amazon is not going to continue just to destroy every new category and then also maintain their market share at least in the mid to high 30s as far as taking new share in e-commerce. So to me, I think Amazon down 11% from its recent highs. I like the fact that it's consolidating in and around here. I'm just going to tell you, in 2021, if Walmart's going to work, Amazon's also going to work. I don't think you have to play would you rather here.
All right. That's why Karen Feinerman owns both of them right now. So let's talk a little bit more about that big battle between Walmart and Amazon. Joining us now is Stephanie Wissink, retail equity analyst at Jefferies. Stephanie, thank you very much for joining us on the Fast Line tonight. You've heard the traders bally it about. In your mind, is Amazon still the preeminent way to play retail versus Walmart?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think I tend to agree with the traders that are suggesting why not both. I think if we're talking about prescription medications as a proxy for why two can win and not one, I mean, 48% of the U.S. population uses a prescription medication every 30 days, and there's 4.5 billion retail prescriptions that are filled every year. That is ample playground for both Walmart and Amazon to win, at least in the medium term. And I think in order to pick one or the other, we'd need to get into a pretty clear duopolistic situation, and we're not even close to that yet.
All right, it's the battle for the consumer, Stephanie, but I wonder, when it comes to opportunity, Amazon getting into prescription drugs and delivery of these types of products, it's a disruptive force, there's no doubt. But take a look at Walmart's customer base and who uses their pharmacy delivery, and then look at the Prime membership roster. Where is the bigger opportunity? Amazon encroaching on spaces like for CVS Health and Walgreens and Walmart, or Walmart trying to make some inroads versus Amazon in this type of market?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think I would agree again with the panel that Walmart, from an opportunity perspective, has much further of a gap to close. And at the same time, I think we have to recognize that Amazon is changing consumer expectations every single day. And so the more they get involved in these categories, while they may not be the number one share owner in the category, they are going to change consumer expectations. And that has direct derivative implications on how these retailers have to react.
Hey, Stephanie, it's Tim. Thanks for joining us. A theme that I've been pounding in other sectors as well, where there is the possibility to have a hybrid multiple of sorts. I think Walmart's the perfect case. And what's the right number for a company that's growing e-commerce sales disproportionate to the rest of their business? Ticket sizes growing higher, even if actual transactions are down because of e-commerce. Do you keep the same multiple, or can we run it up one or two turns and get a very different price?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the multiple here is deflated relative to the opportunity set. So if we continue to see the e-com business grow, I think we have to recognize that Walmart has the ability to fulfill from store, and that is a proximity advantage that they have. And in the prescription business, that's going to become even more important because the vast majority of prescriptions are filled same day. So that the ticket is written and that, that prescription is filled. So if we look at those immediacy type categories, grocery, prescription, those are going to be the areas where having that physical presence is going to win. And then I'm really interested to see it. We saw Walmart put up great numbers today, and it was broad-based across the entire portfolio. And so it's not just isolated to grocery, but it really is across general merchandise categories as well. So I think we have to give Walmart some credit that they're battling the big giants in their specialty, or a company like Amazon, which is kind of an all-encompassing online broadlines company, that Walmart is holding its own share and in many cases is gaining. So I think there is opportunity for both of these companies to coexist, and the multiple should reflect that with an e-commerce business that's growing near 80%. It's pretty reputable for a company of Walmart size.
Stephanie, it's Karen. Thanks for being on. My only, I guess, the only fly in the ointment of the call was I wanted more on Walmart Plus, and they really didn't give it, and that made me think they didn't really give any, not guidance, but any sort of color around it, because maybe it wasn't performing as well as they hoped. Did you share that, or do you have a different view?
No, I think we all were left a little bit underwhelmed with the lack of disclosure around Walmart Plus. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm around what that platform could mean for Walmart. So there's still an intense level of curiosity around what the size and scale of that business is, and ultimately just how big that CRM could be. I think a couple of the breadcrumbs they left for us, though, is that they did indicate they were pleased with the initial uptake. So I think you're seeing early adoption be in line with, or maybe even a little bit ahead of, what they were expecting. But I think the value is really going to be created in how that data is used and what those customers share back with Walmart about their interests and their indications, and how that allows Walmart to be even better at targeting and building bigger baskets with those consumers. So it feels a bit like it's a feedback loop right now, and maybe in the future it becomes more of a platform of opportunity. And I do think there's a monetization strategy down the road. You know that Walmart does also have a bit of a media or ad business, and they have a big marketplace model in their online business as well. So I can see how they're looping together some various and different strategies, which ultimately at the end of the day is going to kind of put the consumer at the center and wrap around the consumer with all of these different monetization opportunities.
It's a key battle for sure. Stephanie Wissink over at Jefferies, thank you very much. We appreciate it. All right, guys, it wasn't just Walmart and Amazon on the retail front today. We heard from Home Depot as well. Strong earnings there. Blowout same-store sales growth. But the stocks struggled just like Walmart's did. Guy, I'm wondering for your take here. What's up? These are great numbers. Walmart and Home Depot both giving up gains today.
Yeah, I think in terms of Home Depot, maybe people look at valuation and say maybe it's stretched. You know, you've actually seen this before with Home Depot. It's not like we haven't seen an earnings report, the stock sell off. So it doesn't concern me as much. I think Home Depot is still really firing on all cylinders. The only real reservation I think people have comes in the form of valuation. And, you know, I know in 1976, Tim remembers this, Dom, you probably weren't around yet, but Mary McGregor recorded a song. And as Tim will tell you, it's called
Torn Between Two Lovers.
So that's why.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Like,
so that's why I'm playing Would You Rather. Feeling like a fool. Loving more than you's breaking all the rules. And I don't want to break the rules, which is why in the game, I'll take Walmart. I understand why you'd want to own them both, but I think Walmart has more upside. In terms of Home Depot, you give it a couple days, I think you buy it again, Don.
All right. So, Dan Nathan, I'm kind of curious. Music references aside, we had a real, almost secular tailwind, it felt like, for these home improvement type companies, and COVID just exacerbated it. It's not just low interest rates. It's not just government stimulus checks. These stocks have gone up even without some of these tailwinds. Can it continue, and what drives the next leg higher?
Well, I think it's probably seasonal, Dom. I think that you got to look back and you look at those government stimulus checks. They had a lot to do with it, the forced lockdowns. So we're going into a period right now where the virus is surging again. We're not having forced lockdowns and we don't have fiscal stimulus. And we probably pulled forward a ton of demand. I know we had a conversation a few weeks ago about Whirlpool into their earnings report, and we were kind of debating whether this is a multi-leg story or is it ready to take a pause, and you saw what happened after their results. So to me, I think that Lowe's, Home Depot, I think these can take a pause. I think it's going to be a long winter here, and I'm not certain that there's enough stimulus behind a weakening economy right now that is going to keep this trade going. We may have to revisit in the spring.
All right, so seasonal trends playing out there for sure. Thanks very much, guys. Coming up on the show, Twitter's got a new look, but will the Little Blue Bird's newest feature be a fleeting craze? We'll dig in and explain. And then later on, General Motors' lost decade. It's been 10 years since the company's IPO, and the stock has been stuck in neutral. So what will it take to kick things into high gear, into overdrive? All that and more when Fast Money returns after this.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Here we go. Welcome back to the show. Fleet Week came a little bit early here on Fast Money, or late, depending on how you want to look at it. No, we're not talking about ships or the Navy. We're talking about tweets. Twitter rolling out a new feature today called Fleets, just like in Fleet of Ships. Let's get out to Julia Boorstin with the details. Not in the Navy, but still, take us through what exactly Fleets. Are.
This has nothing to do with the Navy, Dom. Sorry to disappoint, but Twitter is the latest social platform to allow its users to post photos or text that automatically disappears after 24 hours. Now, fleets, this refers to the fleeting nature of a thought, are now rolling out to iPhone and Android users. Now, this is designed to play into users' desire to minimize their digital footprint, and Twitter says that those new to the platform when they were testing it out found it an easier way to share. But on the downside, the fact that these messages disappear means that fleets lend themselves less well to advertising. Now, this feature of disappearing messages was pioneered by Snapchat's Stories feature and then followed by Instagram Stories. Twitter's latest feature launch comes the same day that CEO Jack Dorsey testified before the Senate, along with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. They both said they agree that the Section 230 liability shield needs to be revised. Both of them called for more transparency around rulemaking and enforcement. They were also pressed on anti-conservative bias, which they both denied. Dom?
All right, Julia Boorstin, fleets. I guess it means fleeting. That's the play on words, right? Pretty much. All right, Julia Boorstin, right. Thank you very much. Twitter, we're going to trade it, maybe not in a fleeting way. But Dan, Nathan, fleets, are they a game changer for Twitter? Does it make you want to buy the stock?
Well, listen, I don't think it's a game changer, but I do like the fact that I opened my Twitter application today on my iPhone and I saw something different for like the first time in 10 years. And I thought that was pretty cool. There's a company that has not been growing users. That was one of the reasons why the stock got nailed last month following their Q3 results. And I think that they have a lot of innovations to roll out. Not all of them are going to be game changers. But to me, I like the fact that they're doing it for all intents and purposes. I just make one point is that, you know, I don't know why this has to be, you know, like an Instagram or a Snapchat sort of thing. I don't know why tweets can't expire after one day, that sort of thing. And maybe they're going to be pushing towards that. But I like the innovation.
Karen, do you like the innovation? Is this going to make you tweet more? I follow you on Twitter.
You do. I think I follow you, too. I don't tweet very much, though. So I'm not really there. The target user, though. I mean, for social media stocks, I'd rather be in Facebook, and Mark Zuckerberg also getting grilled on the Hill today. You know, I just still think, despite all of the political noise around it, I don't know what's actually going to change. And, you know, the product that they provide, targeted advertising, is just too valuable. So I like Facebook here. I think the valuation's not expensive.
I mean, it may be worth noting here, like you said, Karen, that both these CEOs were grilled by lawmakers on Capitol Hill on both sides of the aisle, by the way. Guy Adami, I don't know if you caught any of that grilling that happened today for those CEOs. I watched some of it. Is this a true scenario where social media has real headwinds in the coming years because of just how much controversy they've stoked about, are they publishers or just platforms?
I missed it. I was actually relacing my shoes at the time. That was, I found that more interesting than watching virtual hearings from the floor of the Senate. With that said, Jack Dorsey's a stud, and I don't think he gets enough credit for running two companies simultaneously. And in terms of the stock, I think Twitter's fine. Now, I didn't think it was going to go from 53 to 38, but 38 was the level that it held a few months ago. 38 seems to be the line in the sand. And if you look, David Einhorn from Greenlight just initiated a position, I think half a million shares or so, and he's obviously one of the more savvy investors out there. So I think Twitter is fine. I think you try to buy it again here. Again, I didn't anticipate that huge decline from 53 down to 38, but 38 is your line in the sand. I think it goes higher from here, Dom.
All right, there's your trade for you on Twitter. Thanks very much, guys. We've got much more ahead here on Fast Money. Here is what's coming up next.
We're breaking out the candles and party hats to celebrate a major milestone for GM. But will the next 10 years deliver gains that investors are wishing for? We get some answers. And later, a Bitcoin breakthrough. With the cryptocurrency at its highest level since 2017, how long until it gets back to new highs? We've got that and a lot more when Fast Money returns.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Happy birthday of sorts to GM. It was 10 years ago today that General Motors IPO'd following its government-backed bankruptcy and bailout during the Great Financial Crisis. And in that time, a lot has happened for the company. But for investors, as you can see there, it's hardly been a joyride. Let's get to our very own Phil LeBeau with more on that and GM's birthday. Good afternoon, Phil.
Hi, Dom. You know, 10 years ago, I remember being at the New York Stock Exchange, interviewed Chris Liddell, who was the CFO of GM, and he said, boy, I think we're going to be primed to do really well. And he wasn't alone. A lot of people on the floor that day said, check this out. It's coming in at 33. Wouldn't be surprised if it ends the day at about 45 or 50. It'll be at 60 in a couple of months. No. It never has gotten above $45 a share, and it certainly didn't that day. Traded up, maybe I think it finished at like 33.18, something like that. It was a pretty anticlimactic IPO after the government-structured bankruptcy. But a lot has changed for General Motors over the last 10 years. It is not as though this company has stood still, and the CEOs, and there have been a couple of them since that IPO, have done nothing. Over the last 5 years, it's been Mary Barra in charge. What's happened to GM? Well, it is a far more profitable company, probably the most profitable decade they've ever had. Net income, $55.5 billion over the last 10 years. They have exited Europe. That was a huge move, a smart move, because Europe was nothing but a waste hole where they continually lost money. They have cut money-losing models, primarily cars and sedans, which has been a move in the industry, focusing on the profitable trucks and SUVs, and they've started the pivot to electric vehicles. All of this raises the question, okay, when you look at General Motors, what is the EV plan? Well, they've got 20 new models by 2023. They're going to be focusing on making more EV SUVs and pickups. Think about the Hummer that's on the way starting at the end of next year into 2022. They're going to leverage the Ultium battery technology, which, by the way, within the industry, a lot of people say that's the real key here at General Motors. That's the asset to focus on, and they're going to be flexing their muscle in China. Remember, they are the number two brand in China. It is the country that is embracing EVs faster than any other country. That's where GM will hopes to make hay when it comes to electric vehicles in the future. And the reason we're pointing this out is because you compare GM versus Tesla and NIO. NIO I think they made 18,000 cars last year, Dom. I mean, something ridiculously low, and yet they've had a better year, a better last 6 months than General Motors. So that's going to be the key. What happens now as the industry pivots toward electric vehicles? And General Motors is positioned to do well. Now the question is, can they execute on their strategy?
Phil, I got a question for you. I'm going to strip, for the time being, and indulge me, I'm going to strip Tesla and NIO and all the other smaller boutique electric EV vehicle makers kind of out of the equation. When you look at the majors, the Toyotas, the GMs, the Audis of the world, which do you think have the bets placed properly in terms of trying to drive growth in the future?
The best bets right now, probably GM and Volkswagen. And they are probably, they have the best portfolio strategies that have been laid out. But again, it comes down to execution. Now, General Motors, the Ultium battery technology is strong. And what their game plan is makes sense on paper. But every time I bring this up with people in the industry, everybody says the same thing. They have got to execute. They certainly didn't do that with the Volt nor the Bolt. Don't make it strike three with future products. Most believe the Hummer is a good indication that they will not strike out in the future and that they will execute. So look at GM and look at Volkswagen. Those are really the two big boys that are best positioned. Ford is putting a lot of resources into EVs as well. So you can't count them out at this point. But when it comes to the established automakers, those are the ones to focus on.
All right, Phil LeBeau, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Now let's trade it around the horn here. Coming up, guys, let's talk a little bit about what's happening with these EVs and GM. Karen Feinerman, is GM a stock? I said it was stuck in neutral. The chart shows it. What gets them out of neutral?
Well, this is the new not neutral for them. I'm long it. I've been long it for a really long time. It was very painful. I think it might have traded as low as 14 in the depths of the pandemic market sell-off. I'm long it here. I love Mary Barra. I love all of the very dramatic changes, and Phil did a great job outlining them, you know, shrinking where they should have, like in Europe, their China presence, Ultium their Ultium battery. That's what they're talking about with Nikola. And I think the Hummer in itself won't be a game changer, but I think he's right about them having if they have a hit on their hands, that would be great. I believe in her. The stock is not crazy expensive at all. It's only that it was just stuck in the mud in the 30s or 20 handle for so long that it feels expensive here, but it really isn't. So I am staying long GM.
Tim Seymour, Karen makes great points about the valuation argument there. Is General Motors one that you think could be a good place to put some bets, betting on electric vehicles in the future of the auto industry, I should say, as a whole?
Well, Karen and I have been united in our belief in GM since Global Motors IPO'd 10 years ago, which is what we were calling it because of their assets around the world at a time when we were experiencing global cyclical growth and the world seemed like a place that wanted to come together. But the most important thing at GM that came out of that restructuring and the IPO is it came out fundamentally a more profitable company. And I think the market has failed to recognize that and failed to ascribe more value to the cash on the balance sheet. And that actually may be a catalyst in terms of capital allocation. But you talked about like the absurdity of valuations in the auto space. And yeah, I'll at me all day long. But GM has the best selling EV car in China, ahead of Tesla, ahead of NIO. And it's a company that obviously has major drivers that Phil laid out in terms of their models coming here. Most importantly, this stock trades around six and a half times next 12 months. It's ridiculously cheap. And it's a company that's proven to be structurally more profitable. The old GM of even that IPO, even though it came out of it more profitable, is one that was afraid to cut assets and unprofitable. The fact that North America is profitable again for this company is extraordinary. I've been adding to a position over the last month and a half, and I think it's going a lot higher.
All right. Thanks very much, guys, for the thoughts on GM there. Coming up on the show, Bitcoin breaking out in a very big way. We'll find out what sent the cryptocurrency to its highest level in nearly 3 years. We are pushing the $18,000 mark. Remember, the record highs were just below $20,000 3 years ago. Plus, we are gearing up for earnings from this year's best performing semiconductor stock. How our traders are playing NVIDIA into tomorrow's results. Fast Money is back right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Markets pulling back today, as you can see there, after the S&P and Dow set new record highs. So where do stocks go from here, and where should you put your money now? Let's bring in Nadine Turman, CEO of Solstein Capital. Nadine, you saw the red numbers on the screen, but it's a streak that's broken to the upside. What exactly are your thoughts right now about whether the market is the place to buy? And if so, what types of companies, what types of industries?
Don, thanks for having me. It's really about positioning. If you look at where implied volatility and realized volatility has been, which we do through the options market and key positions around the world, you can see the surface implied volatility. And then when you look out further in the future, it's very complacent. So what it means is that people are not paying as much for protection as they were a month ago. So that should give you a little bit of a red or yellow flag, I would say, versus the last two Mondays of the stock market going up. But we still do see lots of pockets of opportunity. So it's not to say that you can't invest. You just have to be a little bit more selective.
All right. So tell me more. Where? I mean, is it like a Tesla? Is it like an Amazon? Is it in the small caps, the growth space? Is the value rotation coming back for real this time? I don't know.
You know, you saw the quick move. You know, we wrote about it to our investors in mid-October that there'd be a small cap rally. Well, that happened. So I'd be careful playing that from here. But where are great opportunity zones? One is China. We've been long China for a few months now. Whether it's China tech, the China consumer, or China the country, there's lots of ways to play it for your viewers. You could do it through ETFs. One is CHIQ, that's the consumer. You could do KBA, which is broad China. And then KWEB is China tech. So JD is a position that you're showing now. We've been long Pinduoduo. So when those are dislocating after a huge run, as it was in Pinduoduo today, we'd be picking up some of those dollars left on the floor.
Hey, Dean, it's Guy. Thanks for being here. What about some of the casino stocks that have exposure, like a Macau, for example? Does a Las Vegas Sands make sense at these levels?
You know, it does. I think you have to trade around it because they are shedding their U.S. assets. I think that's a strategy to appease the Chinese government and to be able to get the registrations, the licenses they need. But China is having a huge effort to connect Hong Kong, which is the financial capital, with China, the mainland, and also, as you mentioned, Macau, which is the entertainment center. So we believe the China consumer is very strong right now, and you're going to see significant improvement. It could be LVS, as you mentioned, so Las Vegas Sands, Melco. There's other positions there abroad, too, that should benefit.
All right. Nadine Turman, Solstein Capital, thank you very much. Great to get your thoughts. You'll
thank
have
you
to join
much.
Us again soon. Thank you. All right, Dan Nathan, I'm interested because China has been kind of put on the, I mean, as much as it can be put on the back burner. We were talking trade war for months and months and months on end until COVID. Is China the place to be given what we've seen over the last several months?
Well, listen, Tim has been saying that for the last several months, so I give him a lot of credit there. It's been a massive breakout. He's been talking about it a lot. I'll just mention this, that Alibaba today closed on the low of the day. It's down about 20% from its all-time high just made last October. It looks like it's got another 10% down to its breakout level from early July. But if you think that they've dealt with the virus better and they basically have reopened and you think the Chinese consumer's okay, that's probably one that you can start picking at on its way back to that 230, 235 level, because to me, that's probably the best consumer in the world right now to bet on, given where they are versus the virus to us right here.
So, Karen, we're showing now charts of Alibaba. We did show during Nadine's segment, Pinduoduo, JD.com, also C Limited. Is there a particular favorite you have with regard to taking a view on that China trade?
Well, I have Alibaba. It's actually a fairly big position, so I find myself in the unusual position of agreeing with every word that Dan just said. So I like Alibaba right here. I bought some higher than here. So that was before the Ant Financial, which I do think is a real hit to value. Is it this much of a hit? I don't think so. So I would be a buyer right here.
All right. Alibaba, a buyer there for Karen Feinerman. Coming up on the show, the cannabis craze is red hot right now. How can you profit off of that pot trade? We'll be joined next by a top CEO in the cannabis industry. And then later on, the crypto craze. Yeah, it's back again. Bitcoin soaring, as you can see there, almost breaching 18,000 per token. We'll find out what's driving the big move in crypto when Fast Money returns after this. Welcome back. This is Fast Money. Earnings season in full swing, and the retail industry isn't the only one reporting this week. We are also getting results from all the pot stocks. Check out Trulieve Cannabis, the company reporting a record quarter today. The stock is up nearly 130% just so far in 2020. Joining us now is the CEO of Trulieve, Kim Rivers. Kim, welcome back to the show. Please talk to us about what exactly is driving those record results from a big picture perspective. Is it because there is expansion specifically here in the U.S.?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Absolutely. We are on the cusp of a cannabis wave in this country. We saw this last election with every single state that had a cannabis ballot initiative on the ballot passing overwhelmingly from the deep south state of Mississippi to, of course, our friends up north in New Jersey. And really, I think it's just becoming more and more evident as time passes that this is not a partisan issue. It's not a red or a blue issue. It is, in fact, a human one. So certainly, I think from a macro perspective, health and wellness alternatives, particularly in the year 2020, are becoming very, very important to American consumers. And then also, of course, we've got operators who now are reaching scale. So Trulieve is an example. We employ over 4,000 people. We have operations of 1.9 million square feet of cultivation. We deploy products across 71 stores across six states. So, you know, the opportunity is becoming very real, and it is, in fact, here to stay.
Kim, I wonder, is there a specific geography that is hotter than others right now or that's growing faster? Are there specific products around the cannabis ecosystem that are doing better? Is it, say, CBD-type creams? Is it straight-up hemp products? What exactly is driving some of that growth?
You know, it's interesting. We actually see growth across many markets in the U.S. Certainly, as I mentioned, we've got the Northeast Corridor, which is turning on. New Jersey overwhelmingly adopting recreational use certainly is going to be a catalyst, we think, for that part of the country where many states already have robust medical programs. In our, starter state of Florida here, we have approximately 2% of the population that are medical cannabis patients, and that market is growing incredibly, it's incredibly hot right now in terms of the growth trajectory with over, 3,000 patients joining the program on a weekly basis. You've got, of course, out west, the Arizona market, which just adopted recreational as well. And then really in the central part of the country, which we haven't talked about yet, really in quite some time with South Dakota passing both medical and recreational, which was a historical moment in that they passed both initiatives this past election. So it's happening everywhere, quite frankly. Of course, our friends out west have been part of the cannabis craze for quite some time, as we have some more mature markets in both California and in Colorado, Oregon, and Washington. But even those markets, we're seeing impressive growth rates on a sequential basis. So, and in terms of products, what I can say is that certainly CBD has its place. However, we are seeing, of course, the CBD market is fairly saturated. And a lot of that is regulatory in nature. There haven't been many restrictions, or they've been kind of caught in a bit of purgatory from a regulatory perspective with the federal government. Really, we're seeing high growth again in THC products. Ratio products, of course, are important for folks as well. We're starting to see some growth also in minor cannabinoid products. So, for example, we just released a product that's a CBN product, non-psychoactive, is derived from full THC, but assists with sleep. So, lots of research to be done still in the space, lots of innovation happening in the space, and really incredible growth across a number of categories and certainly across the country.
Hey, Kim, it's Tim. Thanks for joining us. These are great numbers. And, you talk about that growth, and Trulieve is referred to as the gold standard in terms of profitability in the industry. And so help us understand just how sustainable this growth is. As someone that's been investing in the industry for a long time, I think we're only just getting to both the addressable market, et cetera. But talk about profitability and talk about the operational leverage in your business as one of the leading, there's a handful of leaders that seem like they're moving ahead of the pack. And how far ahead of the pack are you? There's a few questions in there, but address those if you can.
Sure. Well, in terms of the overall opportunity, like I said, we're seeing really a sentiment change across the country, which is going to lead to changes from a regulatory perspective, which, of course, is a key driver as additional states open up. And then, of course, as those states continue to expand their programs, Pew Research poll in 2019, 91% of Americans are in favor of some form of cannabis. And so, again, certainly we think that that macro opportunity is certainly there. When you talk about Trulieve in our business, we have to be extremely financially disciplined in this industry. As you know, Tim, we are taxed under 280E, which is a significantly higher tax rate. It's approximately 50% tax rate. You know, to put it in perspective, year to date, Trulieve has paid approximately $71 million in taxes. In a normal business or in any other type of business, we would have paid approximately, or we would have saved approximately $40 million. Why that's important and why we have to watch every single dollar is the fact that our cost of capital is also significantly higher. As you know, we aren't able to fully uplist in the U.S. And so and our rates in terms of what I'll call them cannabis rates are significantly more expensive. We don't have access to regular banking. So we are literally in this industry plowing ahead with 50% EBITDA margins and, again, high level of growth and revenue production with one arm, sometimes it feels like two arms tied behind our back. So you can just imagine the opportunity and the growth opportunity in the sector if we were just able to operate like a normal business and that if the handcuffs were taken off.
All right. Trulieve CEO Kim Rivers, thank you very much. We appreciate it. You'll have to come back soon. Tell us what's going on with that business and, of course, the margin story as well.
Would love to.
All right. Coming up on the show, NVIDIA shares are surging this year with earnings on deck. Can the chip stock rally keep going? We'll dive into the options pits for a look at that. And here's a sneak peek at the Cramer Cam. Yes, the Cramer Cam. Jim's chatting exclusively with the CEO of Lordstown Motors. Catch that full interview at the top of the hour. Much more Fast Money coming up after this. Welcome back. We have breaking news right now out of Washington, D.C. Let's get to Ilan Moy with the latest COVID infection positivity. Ilan.
Dom, Republican Senator Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, has now tested positive for coronavirus. In a tweet, he says that he is feeling good and will keep up on his work for the people of Iowa from home. However, this does throw a wrench into the possible confirmation of Judy Shelton to the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. Her nomination failed to move forward today, in part because Grassley and another Republican senator have been in quarantine after being exposed to COVID. If and when McConnell will bring her nomination up again for a vote remains in question, especially now as we're learning, Dom, that Chuck Grassley has tested positive for coronavirus. Back to you.
All right, Ilan Moy, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Switching gears now, check out what's happening with shares of NVIDIA pulling back just slightly today alongside the rest of the market. The chip stock heads into tomorrow's big earnings report up more than, get this, 125% this year. And options traders are betting even more gains lie ahead. Mike Coe has the action, the options action. Over to you.
Hey. Hi, Dom. How are you? So what we did see was calls outpacing puts. Right now, the options market's implying a move of about 7%, just under the 8% that it's averaged over the last eight quarters. And one of the areas that we saw some activity were the November 550 calls that expire this Friday. About 3,000 of those traded for $12.50. Buyers of those calls might be betting that the stock could retest the highs that we saw on November 6th.
All right, Mike Coe with the action there from NVIDIA ahead of that big earnings report. Thank you very much. For more options action, be sure to tune into the full show. It happens Fridays, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time, right here on CNBC. Well, coming up, attention, HODL gang. Crypto guys know what I'm talking about. Bitcoin doing something it has not done in about 3 years. Those details when Fast Money returns after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got a Bitcoin alert for you. The cryptocurrency is in rally mode. Again, still trading above the 17,000 mark for the first time since, yes, December of 2017. Also, the market cap nearing an all-time high. So is the crypto rally here to stay? Karen, to you.
Yes, I think the crypto rally is here to stay. I don't think it's perfectly linear. I was sort of surprised during the day. I saw it up a few hundred. And, you know, we talked a lot about institutional investors having an interest. I called BK, said, hey, BK, what's up? By then, it was up maybe 1,000. And he said, yeah, the institutional interest is just exploding. And then he mentioned to me that Scaramucci at SkyBridge is actually starting a Bitcoin and other alternative funds. So, if you know, institutional investors now feel like the good housekeeping seal of approval is on it with, you know, Paul Tudor Jones and Druckenmiller and Novogratz and others. So I'm staying long Bitcoin.
All right, Dan, Nathan, what about you crypto-wise? We know what you feel, but is this rally sustainable?
You know, it's funny. Back to BK, Brian Kelly, you know, he and I had a chat about it recently, too. He showed me a log chart, a 5-year of Bitcoin. You look at that thing and it looks like it's about to absolutely explode. We know a lot of traders in the space look at the technicals. And I just mentioned this is that it's not just Bitcoin. There's a lot of other cryptos that combined have gained the market cap of Bitcoin in the last 6 months.
All right. So not just Bitcoin. We'll take a look at all the other parts of the ecosystem as well. And of course, those prices pushing up that 18,000 mark. All right, guys, it's time now for the final trades. We'll go around the horn. Tim Seymour to you first.
Yeah, so happy birthday to GM at 10, and it's trading well south of 10 times earnings and is worth buying even after a big move. I am long.
All right, long GM. Dan Nathan.
Yeah, you know, guys, always in my head, the Twitter. I don't think Fleet is, you know, game-changing, but I think it's good little innovation. I think you can buy Twitter here.
All right, buy Twitter. Karen Feinerman.
Yes, and Dan was in my head. I liked everything he said on Baba. I would buy it right here. I did buy it higher. So Alibaba.
Alibaba's a buy there. And Guy Adami, we started the show with you. We will end it with you. What do you think?
Yeah, and Dan Nathan's got me thinking. I mean, he was so dour about long winters, long December. So a little Counting Crows for you, Dom. Great tune. Levered energy plays. PSX.
All right. Go out
with the crows.
I'm feeling mellow right now. Thanks very much to all of you guys for watching Fast Money. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.